much less for one. When they fire, it's always in their mind a high probability situation. That doesn't mean you're 100% right. It's not 1-to-1. It's 1.3. And that's okay. You don't get to be perfect and you're never going to get there. You can strive for perfection. You will always lose trades. And I'm consistently losing trades all the time. Anyway, so what we're going to be doing today, learning to trade the Hunt Volatility Funnel. It's a high probability. In my essence, it's, I would say, moderately high, probably in complete candor. 50% and above, I consider high. It just means you're slightly more likely to win. So if you're 51%, the key part is it's fast moving and it's a high reward to risk ratio, which is the really unique feature. We get really tight and we get highly expansive moves. So technical analysis, this is the path to doing the specialist thing. I haven't chose fundamental analysis. There's people that will swat up on balance sheets for equities and study everything they know. One of the key things we do when we want to get better at things is we take the university approach, the traditional education approach. I'm going to go read more books on it. I'm going to go read more Bloomberg articles on it. And you end up becoming a highly well-informed, useless trader. You know everything about Yellen and her personality, who likes her, who doesn't like her, the gossip, what she's more likely to do, what she isn't likely to do, what the GDP number is, what that number is. You become a highly well-informed and you've crammed yourself with data and information, and from a trading perspective, you have not advanced yourself. The advancement in yourself, as Rand Howell, that I've spoken to immensely, is all about your inner game and recognizing that which you control and that which you don't, and working on your reactions to a market, which is the item you can control and not the outcome. You have no control over the outcome. One moment Yellen might look bullish or hawkish on interest rates, and in the next meeting she can suddenly come out being dovish. You will never get that right. You will never guess which moment. She might be consistent three times in a row and do something completely different the next time. You don't know. It's completely, in some essences, those events are almost random. Your guess will be as good as someone else's. You can try profile her character and her personality. If Fed chasing because you trade the dollar is critical. If you're a commodity trader, you can swat up on oil and copper. Copper was a short, China was sinking. We made 30% on the long side for a technical reason only. For a technical reason only. And then afterwards, the news came that Trump was going to do an infrastructure play. So what is the thing? A lot of critics of technical analysis say it's kind of like driving a car with looking only in the rear view mirror. And that what's the use of that? You're going to crash into X, Y, or Z. And the point is, actually, there's immense amounts of use to knowing what kind of a road you're on. Is it a mountain road, or you're in a desert on a salt plain where you're safe? Is it a winding path? It gives you information that it's better than not having at all. You can't predict the future, but there are patterns. So those who don't learn the history are destined to repeat it. That's George Santayana who said that. In my mind, that my interpretation of that at a technical level is, if we fail to recognize past levels of price significance, patterns or market geometry before, created by the same participants in the markets who will be participating tomorrow, remember most of them are institutional and most of the big guys are the big players. They show up every day, Monday through Friday, if it's a currency trader or an oil trader. They don't go from trading a 1 million account to a 500 million account from one day to the next. Doesn't happen. And as they allocate capital to you, they're taking it away from someone is not performing it. So the gross net participation by the institution is typically similar. So we exploit market geometry. We're unlikely to recognize a forecast or get any benefit if you don't do these things. So you are being given information. The seeds of tomorrow are sown today. The seeds of tomorrow events are sown today. In other words, life is a continuous video stream. It's not static, single frames of still shots. The next shot has basis on what was the previous shot. In other words, if I know it's daytime to now, the next frame for a minute, it's probably still daytime on balance of probability, unless a solar eclipse comes in really quick. The probability is, if I look out there, it's still going to be about the same light. So this is the value of technical analysis. It does have value. I'm going to give you another little quick video just 1 minute in length to make a point on technical analysis, and I hope this plays and the audio is good. Audio not good. 1 second. Where is the output? I might have to just check where that's output to. Second, gents, just have to check the settings, yeah? Try that again. One day I'll be an awesome tech guy who just gets it right first time, every time. We don't want that. That is input. That should be it, shouldn't it? Where's my internal speakers? Is that it? Let's try that. There we go.
Hi, I'm Rob Hunt. I'm a trader and a teacher in the trading space. We're on a platform in a typical UK station. Both a trader and a teacher in the trading space. We're on a platform in a typical UK station. People talk about technical analysis and they say, how can something that is retrospectively looking be of any value for you going forward? Particularly those that trade fundamentally. They look at valuations. They can't see how looking at a price chart it can give you anything forward looking in value. The natural tendency for most people as their train arrives is to walk along the platform in the direction of the train. Particularly those that travel less often. As someone who witnesses past behavior, I'm aware that the door will stop right by me.
So the point I'm making, I suppose, in that clip is most people are momentum chasers. You're standing on the platform. It actually, in the UK, we have quite a bit of train travel. Forgive me, in the States and the South Africa and those kind of countries where it's not common. But you stand in a UK platform or any other European city that has traveled, and as trains are coming, everyone starts drifting. And you actually feel the urge to start drifting with them. And this is called the herd stampeding element. In fact, you'll even override your higher wisdom to feel the comfort of belonging in the crowd. And you will walk with them down the platform for a while. Because the train is coming. It's going that way. Let's all start moving. No, it isn't. The train is a defined length. The platform is a defined length. Previous observation can tell you, give or take, within half a meter where a door will stop. And all you need to do is be by a door. You're still getting on at the same place and you're getting off at the same place. You're saving no time, no energy, or no other relevance. But try stand still when everyone else starts walking past you. They even look at you like you're the moron. They look at you like you're the moron. You know, what are you doing? Go down there, follow the train, follow the train. Everyone follows the train. Everyone in trading is a momentum chaser. Nearly everyone wants the up move, but only wants the up move once it's up moving.
Yep.
So they chase momentum. And what that actually means is you're getting in with a herd of people all rushing to get in with a fear of missing out. So there are a number of fears you have. The fear of loss and the fear of missing out are two of the biggest. And so everybody chases the move. And my thinking on the financial mathematics, so if you come from a family with some level of mathematics, as I do, is actually all the financial mathematics go wrong when you're chasing in. Because it's already moved a bit, that's what's got you excited. By the time you get your fill, which is going to be crap, because you're doing what the 91% of other people are all simultaneously trying to do. It's like me shouting fire in a cinema, and you know I happen to know it's a false alarm, but everyone else just stampedes. If you're going to get the door, you're going to take ages to get out, because everyone else is trying to get out. And they're all scrumming down. They've all got self-interest at heart. And that's pretty much how broker platforms go. And they moan about their brokers. They internalize or externalize their failure. And I'm not going to tell you brokers are saints, but generally, most of my own losses or bad fills were as a result of my own decisions that I made. So to you all, I will say, take accountability for the outcomes you get. It's not your broker. He isn't sitting there with a dastardly plan that morning, how we're going to get Mr. X's money by giving him a crap fill. You are doing something that everyone else is doing that gets you the crap fill. And we are momentum chasers by inherently. So stand on the platform and glare at the people that are looking at you following the trade. You are not a momentum chaser. You don't need to be. You're more efficient in it. So that's the idea behind that. So what do we want to do objective-wise? We asked some of you what the objectives are, and we'll still be working through each of the virtual guys at the breaks, Saturday and Sunday, to get to know them all. For those that we haven't covered, and the key part is the beginning is often we're going to first stop you from losing the game. Because there's a number of clear-cut pitfalls where the game is actually physically lost. Before you even start, you are flawed. In other words, it's kind of like designing the car with square wheels. It's just not going to get off the ground. It's wrong from the outset. So we're going to first make sure that you're not sabotaging yourself. And in many ways, that's what happens. So there's certain requirements, and we need to understand what are those things where we lose the game before we've even started. We first got to eliminate those. Now, the amazing thing about the HVF method is by its virtue of structure, it removes a lot of those for you. In other words, if you are compliant and observing it and submitting fully to this process, a lot of those things that destroy you are already taken care of. But initially, you're not necessarily, you like the idea of the method, but you're not convinced by the process. So I'm here to explain all the places where you get it wrong and then show you how and why this, by following this process truly and getting you to a deeper level committed, you are already avoiding a number of landmine fields that clear out large parts of the 91%. So those minimum requirements to give you the fighting chance straight away will keep you in the game. Often, winning in the game is initially just staying in the game, existing in the game. Those of you that play cricket, a bit difficult for my American audience, but I know my Australian audience and my English and my South African audience will understand when you, and my Indian audience will understand when the bowler's got the new ball, the opener just has to not get out. It's not about making runs, ducking the bouncer, staying in, letting some of the shine come off the ball, getting a bat to ball a few times, even just for a forward defensive to give it a little roughen it up, and just play yourself in. Sachin Tendulkar makes his centuries after he's read the bowler, after he's understood what his array of arsenal is, after he's seen his away swinger, his in swinger, and the ball is starting to stretch and open up. I don't know if there's an equivalent for Eastern Europe folk and or the US guys, but it's kind of like getting to see all the pitchers' throws in the US, how he throws, all his different variety, and then as a hitter you can start to get a feel. But in cricket you want to stay in and not get out, and then slowly you start accumulating the runs, then you open up, then you're hitting boundaries. Then the power has changed, the bowler's tired, the ball is old, and the batsman's eyes in, now he's hitting sixes, where before he was just glad not to get hit with the ball. And that's the game for you. Every time you're trading, you're in an innings and you've got to play yourself in. And it's even treat every new day as a new cricketing innings. So there's an analogy for you. So we're going to cover all the specifics of this theory to learn what I consider to be fairly simple, but You have to consistently apply it, and there are advanced elements to it. So it's simple in its basic construct, but then we developed and we dug deep. Remember the bird photographers? They could identify everything. They knew which birds skulked on the grounds, which one made what kind of a cry. We're becoming specialists. We're looking in the minutiae of the detail of the HVS. So on the surface level, it's simple, but then slowly we start getting more depth and detail. So this is what we're going to do, and that's the objective of the course. So seven places where you lose the game. I'm going to rip through this quite quickly because many of you know this. But it's very important. Don't take the pace I'm taking you through it as being indicative of the incredible importance I place on this. These are primarily the seven key places where people already lose the game. Lack of a plan or methodology or approach to the market. Many think they have a plan. Oh, I'll do entries on a moving average crossover. That's their plan. And that deals with one element. What it doesn't do is give every aspect of a plan. So, for example, any aspect not fulfilled in your trading aspect that should be fulfilled defaults to the emotional response. The emotional response will be fear of missing out, fear of loss, pain and greed. So any part of a plan that is not completed and defined and written up and is not part of your process, that is absent. And that means a trading plan is what markets do you trade? When do you trade it? What setups? Where is the stop? You don't need to write this down as detailed. You're welcome to write notes on your slide or as you write in the virtual guys on a piece of paper. But all these elements will come up in the slides. Yeah. When do you take off when you're winning? When do you take off when you're losing? Stop loss placement. And how long will you leave this trade open if it does neither? Takes your profit and all of that. Now, with our methodology, we are essentially putting a parenthesis around the trade. At this point, we enter. After that amount of time, regardless what has happened, it should be closed, and that's our target. That little dot has to bounce into one of those three walls. As time moves on, it'll hit the vertical one. As progress moves on, it'll hit the target, or it runs the stop. But it will close. You get run over by a bus, and your ex-wife doesn't know, your current wife, sorry, I've got a four-wife man here, and I'm just thinking ex-wife now. Your current wife doesn't know anything about your trading account. That trade will close automatically for you if you have your time stop, your stop loss, and your target in there. OCO, one order cancels the other. That means everything will be consolidated, closed. Profits will be realized, stops, losses will be realized, and your total money will sit in your account. You won't have a bleeding loss. You won't be left long the oil market when it runs from $100 down to $25 and obliterate the account and all the money is lost. You will have a closed account. That means you don't have to be there for the trading. So going back to this, emotions fill the void. People have inconsistent approaches. On some days, they're more aggressive. Some days they're more cautious because they were hurt the day before. So emotionally, you are inconsistent. You are one of the volatility variables. And this is the amazing thing about the HVF trading method, is we are trading the collective crowd's emotions and volatility. And we bring our own emotional volatility to the market. The game is your emotional volatility level being more contained and less volatile than that of the professional aggregate of all the participants. If you are the same or more volatile, you'll be more inconsistent in your approach than even the people you're trying to model. Because a pattern is a collective on everybody's response to the market. And it will be fear, greed, exhaustion, all the emotions. So first one, excessive tape watching, not having a plan. This means you end up having to watch because your plan is to react. You never not have a plan. The truth be told, in the absence, it's an emotional response. Therefore, you have to be watching. You don't know and you haven't determined when you will close the trade. Well, you better watch what's going to happen all the time. And then you react. And reactions are emotional. Fear, greed. Greed will keep you in the trade. What's the only thing that's going to take you out? fear and pain, real pain. It then becomes a test of how much pain you take. And then you man up, because most of us are men, and you say, I'm not going to be, it'll rally again. I'm going to man up. It's going to come right. And you stand to your beliefs. Because doing U-turns sucks. That's what, you know, wusses do. In politics, you do a U-turn, you're weak. So I'm going to stand too. Stick to your guns. English phrase, common. Stick to your guns. Purple soldier. Don't back down. Guess what happens? The market is giving you information. It's going down and you're ignoring it. You're seeing it as a pain test. Guess who wins? They do. They either get all your money or you finally acknowledge the pain. Either way, you've lost. Greed keeps you in until it creates a situation for pain. Then you get out. So every time you get out badly. Can you see that? That's your emotional default. So excessive, take watching, trading too much, that's all part of it. So what should be in the market? The reason for our, in our case, HVF method setup, a level for your entry, your target, an idea of your risk reward. How would you get into a business? I had a business, a friend who sold Turkish jackets in South Africa. And you would get leather jackets from Turkey, smart, nice, some patchwork ones that were cheap, some of the really fancy ones that were more expensive. He knew his margins at the markets and all his shops for exactly what he was getting on his full price when he sold a Turkish jacket of any variety. He said he wanted to do some trading with me. Just jumped in and started swinging like a madman and a lunatic. I said, you've got to treat this like a business. Say, you understand in the leather trade exactly what you make on a belt and a jacket. You know what you got it in for. You know what your rand risk to the Turkish lira was. Shit, you got all your numbers. You're a businessman. And now you come into this and you don't want to treat it like a business. That's the entertainment then. It's for excitement and entertainment. Don't fool yourself. You're not going to make money. You always pay for your excitement and entertainment. That's may as well go to the casino or the gentleman's club. Go have your whatever makes your boat float. That's like having a lap dance or spinning the wheel at the casino. That is entertainment. It does not fall into the category of business. Yes? So we've got to recognize that there's an addictive excitement genie within us all psychologically. So trading grabs you in many ways. It's clever. It's got tentacles. You have to respect it. You get addicted. It's quite, it gives you a buzz. It's awesome to make money. And then you get the downside. So you end up getting emotions. Your day is determined about how your P&L is up or down, often. So your mood. So a feel for time in trade. We have a time stop, as I've already, and the risk reward. Before you get in, you already have an idea of what's potentially on the table, how much you could be down and how much you typically stand to make. And of course, there's the third outcome where you neither stopped nor risk rewarded, depending on how many time stops you hit. It's not common to hit a time stop. You're usually either stopped out or at risk reward. So a plan allows you an entire trade to be predetermined. That gives you freedom to go have a game of golf and not to be checking your device and upsetting your friends or your wife over dinner all the time. You need to play trading the game for the long run. I did the 9 screens, 14-hour days. You get thrashed. Your health sucks. Your eyes go. You get rashes. You eat badly. You're eating food at your desk. And you end up hating something you originally loved. And you don't need to do that. You can take it from me. It's not a pleasure. It's adrenally taxing. You feel exhausted. First thing you want to do when you wake up in the morning is check your phone. It takes control over your life. So the idea behind becoming a lifestyle trader is you do your thinking, your planning, and you determine your reactions to the market regardless what it does, and you release to the market to do what it's going to do because you have no control over that. Occasionally, I'd like to keep buying it and adding to the position, getting bigger. I'm going to do my bit to push this thing up. You know, you are an absolute flea in the market. You are immaterial in terms of the scale. Possible exceptions in lightly traded altcoins, for example, for those of you that are in crypto. And even still, you'll have an effect for a while. It's absorbed and then it'll drop back down. So regardless of your size, in the long run, even a whale can't keep Bitcoin up if it's deciding to go down, or a whale shorting it can't keep it down if it's decided to go up. in the long run, he's going to get killed. So, yeah, so plan allows you to do a lot of things. What else do people do wrong? Well, this could have been number one. It's the money management element, but it kind of dovetails with the plan. When we do our plan, because we are determining the stock, because we are determining the targets, we immediately know how much we stand to lose because all the levels are determined. This gives you your trading size. So if you have a £10,000 account and you're risking 1.5%, which would be £150, you can see that you're leaving 15 cents on your share. You can trade £10 a point. It gives you your trading size every time by virtue of mathematics. So all the key levels are determined technically. So everything is technical because we respect what the market has already shown us is significant and worthy of respect. We don't determine mathematically and say, oh, well, 5% below the market. Who cares about what your 5% of that or your account is? The market's going to do whatever it wants. At least have your stops and your levels determined by the market, not by mathematics and your account size. Yes, can everyone get that? You'll be amazed how many trading programs, less so nowadays, but originally that I always had. Never lose more 3. I'll just go, whatever costs me 3% on my account, I'll let it draw down on. Ridiculous. Your sizing comes after you've determined entry and stop. And then it's a unit percentage of your account size. Money management. So it manifests in many ways. You can, but they're all part of the same. So this is how you can become. You trade too big. In other words, you decide the size first, then you think about the stop. What are you doing? You won't be determining or trading by HVF method if you do that. That means you're rushing to jump in and you've got a bit of fear of missing out. So you're just seeing a candle right now that looks like it's really impulsive and you just jump in, oh, I must get at least £10 on, 10 Bitcoin in, X round lots on the oil, and then boom, you go. And then the first time it ticks down, you suddenly go, ooh, where am I going to place my stop? It's always like that. It's ticking up, must get in, whoop, it starts turning around and going back down. Oh, that thing about the stop thing again. You only think about it as the market prompts that thought. The entire process must be determined. There's someone new coming by your technical levels in advance. So every time before you trade, you've thought about the loss. It's really hard to think about a loss when something looks like it's about to run up and you're going long. You say, what if it turned around right now and smashed down? Where is my stop? You have to do that thought every time. Calculate your maths, not chase that candle, never do the entry, and then calculate stop after. You've got to do all your admin first before you're entitled to enter. And in the amount of times I've stopped and I've said, no, that's your rule. You've written a contract with yourself. And then the candles come back down. And then the need to rush was no longer there. And I've done my stop and I've actually planned the trade better. I would have rushed and got in. I would have paid 50% more. Not 50% more, but I would have paid, my size would have been only 2/3 of what it would have been because I was chasing the top of a tick that then subsequently came back and I planned my stop and I actually ended up getting a better entry and I had the comfort of knowing where I was. So that is always your amygdala. I want to tell you about how your brain works. This is something I learned in the last literally year and a half as I've gone on my journey. And the minute I get new learnings, I want to incorporate in a program. This is fascinating. And I had to learn this from a non-trader. You have what's called an amygdala. So when you get a signal, your eyes see something, you hear and you sense something, the saber-toothed tiger outside your cave, you get an immediate adrenalized impulse that comes up and it gets caught by the fastest acting part of your brain. And that is your instinctive fight or flight. So if it's the saber-toothed tiger at the cave, you run deep into the cave where you think he won't get you, you climb a tree, you do something. Because you know you can't fight, so you flight. If it's another man in a threatening way, you decide whether you think you can beat him. In a second, you grab your spear and you charge or you run. And if it's something you can certainly conquer and it's maybe prey, you hunt. But it's quick and you straight away onto it. That is amygdala. You have to stop that signal because your brain's functioning doesn't change because you've changed activity. The discomfort you get from your P&L or the potential profit you think you see in a chart comes to you in a signal. You get an impulse brain, crap, I should buy that. The minute you see that tick up, you're thinking, crap, I should buy that. Amygdala response, quick, react, otherwise lose. What has to happen is you have to stop yourself and get into your higher rational brain and say, this looks at this current moment like it may go up, but in the same way, it could also cost me money when it chooses to go down. Where is my entry? Where is my stop? Let me do the calculations. Let me do my HVF draw. So I think it's running now. I haven't done my maths. I must always do my maths first. You might lose a little bit on an entry on a trade in one trade, but by insisting on that discipline, in the process over the long run, you've saved yourself a blown account. Because one day, when you rush and get in, it's going to be wrong. And you haven't done your sizing and you got in with 10 lots when you should have been getting in with 1 or 2 or 3. And it goes straight down and you've had 40% taken out your account. So saving yourself from that one greed-infested moment, establish the discipline today. The sniper does not march around and fire shots and let everyone know where he is. He is an absolute invisible. These are the guys that wear ghillie suits. Totally low profile, no ego, no see me, hear me, everything. Become like the water, become like the wind, disappear. Patience, discipline, every time. These guys lie in the same place and crap in a hole in the ground, you know, 2 feet away. But if they see a twitch or a movement, they see it well before they get seen. And every time the drill is the same. Binoculars, sights of the weapon, breathing, clean gun, aim, hold, check wind direction. All of these drills are done before he gives himself away with that one shot. So don't do it. Okay, good. Enough said on the distance. Taking too big a risk, that maybe just thinks, sod it. Why don't I just go 5%, 20% to my account? This one's really, I'm so sure of this one. Anytime your brain signals to you, this is a definite. When you use language, and I talk about language quite a lot, I'm the only trader that I know that I've ever experienced in teaching or training that actually says, listen to your own language that you utilize. Because I've heard it in me. I said, that's definitely going. That's making target. No doubt about it. That's going to the moon. Woo! Sure as mustard, sure as your mother. That's doing that. You listen to that, you have totally removed any level of objectivity from your brain. Every setup can fail. We saw it on the Bitcoin highly ascending one. I saw the previous one that was highly ascending, smashed to target and beyond. It set up again. I felt, I think this is high probability. I was doing close to my equivalent of almost saying this should go almost 100% to target. I avoided using that language because of experience, but I deep down I thought, this has got to be 80%. Then I remembered my own theory, buying along the bottom. Yes, cryptos are a little bit different, and then sometimes they aren't. Too much buying through the pattern, breaks, fizzles, makes an interim, smashes down, exhausted. Does what the FX markets and all the other markets have done. And I've like created a special little bubble where you can take any pattern and you assume all the time that it's good because it worked the time before. The market doesn't owe you the exact same response on a similar type pattern. You never know what you're going to get. So that's why we have the rules, and that's why we say high slung, be careful, trade it smaller. I traded it same size because I was confident, 80% confident. That was my equivalent of saying it can't lose. Every time you hear yourself in your language, call yourself back. I don't look to use the word belief. Belief systems are things that you've just accepted without fundamental proof. A lot of religion is based on belief systems. Do not accept belief. Stop saying, I believe. I assess on balance of probabilities. You'll hear me now say OBP, on balance of probabilities. The minute you use that phraseology, you're thinking, why am I saying probability? Because it could also lose, and we're allocating a percentage that recognizes that. Okay, hang on, that made me think about losing. It could lose. What scenario would be that it loses? Okay, whoops. No, but I'm not going to jump in oversizing this. And you just reminded yourself about your sizing and the fact that there are no certainties. This is a game about unknown outcomes for which you have no no control. Never forget that, even when you're at your most surest. Taking too big a risk, no stop losses, or they're too far. Or you move them to give it more room. It's going to come right. I'll just push it lower. It just needs a bit of breathing space. Give it some breathing space. It's starting. It's like a baby. It's growing. Just letting, okay, it's getting his strength up. He's winding up. Okay. The other one, just on that one, no quantification of leverage effect. I once moved into a market that I'd never traded before. Recycled oil and gas. And I didn't do my full research on account sizing. And I saw a setup I liked. And I put on an amount that I typically traded. And it was 10 times bigger, the leverage than arrived. I should have been making like 300 or 400, 500 pounds when it had just did small ticks. And it was like I'd made $4,500 in like literally 45 seconds. I was like way too big, like 10 times too big. And I thought, hey, it's awesome, but look how much I'm up. What did I start to think? Greed. Awesome. Then common sense kicked in. I closed it just in time and got a grand profit I should never have got. Positive enforcement for a down trader. Then went down, could have taken 10, 15 grand out of my account. At the time, I can't remember what the account size, but that would be highly material at that time. So I'd just not done, checked the thing, and I'd not realized the scale. I thought it was X amount of pips, there was an extra zero on. So very, very dangerous also. And not such a common one, but will catch you. Don't use the same size. I always trade £10 a point. I always trade £10 a point and just go to every market. Don't be lazy. If you're going to a new market, the only reason we say this is because HVF is agnostic. You can use it in any market. We've traded a lot of things. My most successful trade was on Robusta Coffee and in a single trade. You know, many of you won't have traded it. You might not know there's a market for trading it. It's actually quite a liquid market, second to oil. Really powerful. But, we can apply an HVF to anything. But make sure you understand the specifications of the contract and the leverage. So just a slight warning, because you might be moving across markets. So overtrading, doubling up on a losing trade. If it goes down, it's going to come right. I'll just add to the position. I'll average down. Typical error. Generally, most of you are aware of these and are hopefully not doing them. And certainly, it doesn't fall into HVF method or protocol. No risk reward to calculation. I consider money management. So here's another thing where Francis Hunt, as trainer and trader, differentiates from many of you who might have experienced other trading education, whether it be YouTube or paid courses or free courses or free YouTube, whatever the case may be. The reward element of money management is part of money management in the same way as risk. It's all money management. Money management means the money of the profits and the losses. Many people only discuss money management as if it's just defense. There's no point just making sure you don't lose or you only lose a certain amount. I had one trader who paid me for private coaching. He was in the Scandinavian area. He flew out to London and we met him at a nice five-star hotel and we had repeated sessions. We bought four sessions, an hour and a half, 45 minutes, and another double session on a following day. And this person was showing me, and he was an engineer and highly mathematical, he was showing me that on the S&P, he never allowed a certain loss to happen. He was quite proud of that. Never allowed us to certainize. He was sticking to his money manager. He'd blown up accounts before. Now he wasn't doing that anymore. And he was slowly eating his account equity. And he told me with some pride, he says, I can tell you almost to the day that all my money will be gone. Which is quite an absurd thing to say. My glide ratio, there's this account going down. I can tell you, and I will not let more loss larger than this. And, like one in five made money and it didn't make much. And he was shorting the S&P. He said, no, American markets are overvalued. I say, well, you're trading a belief system. They can get a lot more overvalued. You need to stop doing what you're doing. You need a methodology. You need a setup. And he kept shorting. He said, but every now and then I win. But I said, but you're winning barely what you lose, and you're only winning five or six out of the trades. Yes, but I have complete control over my money management. And this guy had to be engaged in the market and had to be manifesting his belief system of an overvalued situation. This was 2 or 3 years ago in the S&P, by the way. If he's still out there, destroyed 2 or 3 times. And I was unsuccessful in having him say, I said, you need to stop trading entirely because this is a compulsion. He was showing signs to me psychologically that he would had to be in the game. So there was an obsessive marriage. It's kind of like marrying a wife that you know is poisoning you slowly with every meal. I'm saying this is not a good relationship for you. You need to leave. And he goes, no, I will sit down. I'm a good husband and I will eat what my wife serves me. But she's slowly poisoning you and killing you slowly. And it's like, no, this is a good relationship. So, the wrong side of the table. So anyway, so that's what he did. So there you have there's an interesting from a number of points, belief systems, but he knew his money management. This guy was mathematically very smart. He's an intelligent, wealthy man, very smart, but he had to be in the game. He had to manifest his belief system about the US market. And I could see that even when he won, it wasn't outlier wins because he would snatch a profit and he was just managing losses. So that's just a bit unusual. I've not come across that before, but the reason I mention it, no risk reward miscalculation. It's not managing his rewards. So the system never had an edge. And he admitted that. And that's where you're saying I can even calculate give or take, and you've done, you know, like lines when the account will run out. But it was almost like a compulsion. So that was falls into the account of risk reward. So interesting thing. Correlation unawareness. What do I mean by that? Anyone want to come in? I like to ask questions. Let's have the virtual guys. What do I mean by that? I want to bring you all into the room. I want your answers and response. What do you think I'm talking about when I say money management side, correlation unawareness? Give me your answers in the chat. Give me your take. What do the guys in the room think while we wait for the guys to chat? Who was that who replied? It's a good response, but it's not the one I'm looking for, not receiving enough reward to outweigh a series of losses. That's part of the risk reward, number three. In other words, how many times do you win? And when you win, how much do you typically win relative to your losses? It's a good response, but it ties more to number three than number four. Correlation unawareness.
It's when you put on a series of trades which might be highly correlated, but you don't realize it. So for instance, you might be long oil and short dollar, and you think that two separate trades, but in reality, they might be correlated.
Excellent. So Varun's nailed it. What he's actually saying, and I see a lot more of this than you would imagine. What he's actually said, and I'll repeat his answer, is correlation and awareness is when you have numerous trades. And what in fact you are doing is expressing a similar idea in many different ways. Or you think you're expressing two or three different ideas, but in some ways there is an overlap relationship between the trades. Now, the value, so my profile, and I didn't do an intro of myself, which I typically do in the beginning, but I wanted to get started, and we're at slight delay on the laptop. I'm very fortunate. I've worked with hedge fund managers managing huge amounts. Soon guys make 800 grand in a day. I've worked in an academy with people who've just hit university and are just learning to be traders through a new system, and I've been re-reminded of all the basic early mistakes we make. So the sort of parentheses of starting the journey and exceptional guys that have seen it and come out the other side and are making a huge living out of being professional traders. And all points in between. The correlation unawareness is typical. A number of times in academies, because we do P&L research, someone would be short gold, short oil, long the dollar against the euro, long the dollar against the pound. They think they've got two FX trades and two commodity trades. Meanwhile, they just bullish the dollar, essentially. They bullish the dollar against the anti-dollars and the alternatives and the substitutes. Now, they loved it because when they were right and the dollar was moving, it looked like they were great traders because they got P&L movement on all five positions. to say, yeah, I'm an awesome trader. I've got 5 trades on and every single one is winning. Very much, Mitch. Good response and nice. Thanks for chipping in. And I really like that you do that. And please, all of you, do show it in. We had exactly that, a long dollar event. I kind of mentioned it in the YouTube clip. Bitcoin sold off like a stink. It's an anti-dollar. Gold made its second interim on an HVF upside. Sold off like a stink on it. We're at a high, relative high too. Litecoin, Bitcoin, they all sold off really brutally, more than we expected. The impulsiveness was not expected, but the sell-off was expected. And of course, the euro dipped, and the pound dipped against the dollar. They were all the same thing, dollar strength. There were variances in how much and which one was hurt most, but essentially you had a primary main force, fear that was driving to the dollar. Now, if you had expressed dollar weakness through buying Bitcoin, buying gold, and buying the euro, you got kicked in the backside in 3 different places because your exposure was you were short dollar. And this is another of the benefits for some of you that have come just for crypto and some of you have come just for FX. By looking at all markets with a view and having one methodology to examine each. You don't need to know the explicit fundamentals of what's the demand and supply in oil, but if you can see oil's going to sell off and gold's going to sell off technically, you can ask yourself, is this about the dollar? You can go check the pound USD, the euro USD. How's it technically set up? That's correlation and awareness. So that's something we want to also avoid. The instant expert, that's often the people that do all the reading. Get rich quick scheme. Most of you are past that. One of the reasons why I ask most people to be in a certain age group, and I don't take school leavers and university leavers, is there's a lack of life experience. There's unrealistic expectations. And a number of other things. So by now, you probably realize there aren't Ferrari trades, not a good idea, going for that single home run that's going to change your life in a single trade, not a good idea. Accumulate your wealth only as fast as you emotionally are growing to retain it. And you are developing that responsibility. Trading as a business, you're unlikely to commence business with that strategy. We've touched on this. Each trade should have a calculated potential return. We've calculated on that. So it's not a solo endeavor. So being on your own. I hated the corporate environment. It was stuffy. It was very restricted. I wanted to do. They wanted to think, plan, analyze. I got people to manage below me, and I was being managed by spreadsheets and PowerPoints above, from above down. I thought it's not capturing the real efforts and the work and etc. being done in the job. I wanted to just go trading full-time. I exited that job environment to have my own work-from-home environment, and I got it. And guess what happened? I got bored, lonely, and I stopped learning. What I realized is I didn't want to be entirely alone of all people. I just didn't want to have to manage people. I didn't want people managing me. I went too far. What I actually wanted is a community of life. Mind and all trying to achieve the same thing, where I can learn something occasionally from somebody or help assist and teach somebody, because I recognize they got benefit from teaching as well as from learning. That's what you actually want, and that's kind of what I'm hoping to set up for you. You guys will help and support each other. We've got a great community. The scale is such that it's difficult for a unique response from someone like me on every single post now. Help each other. You understand the principles. Guide each other. That's not an excuse for me not to be available. I will always work at it. We're going to put in webinars and make sure that we do a sweep. But Bernard will be here. I will be here. Brett will be here. But even still, all help each other. The teaching is the learning. Teach that which you seek to learn. It keeps you honest. And no communication is monodirectional. It's bidirectional. So when you assist someone, you are reaffirming for yourself. One hand truly washes the other. But it's not a solo endeavor. You rot on your own. I'm telling you that. And I get what I call sometimes the cynic's question. If this method's so great, why don't you just lock yourself up in a room and become worth £25 million, £100 million, name the number, keep it as quiet as all hell, and forget the rest of the world? Well, it's just simply not that easy. It's simply not that easy, A, to make the money. B, my students keep reaffirming my principles. When I do a theory weekend, I am refreshed in terms of my principles. It's like confirming your marriage vows all over again. You don't go to gym once or for one summer, get buff and strong, and that's it for life. If you stop going, you start losing. Or you start gaining, depending on what it is you're getting bad there. You start getting fat, you get flabby. So the point is, you continually reaffirm. And the training is continual reaffirmation for me, and it makes me a better trader. Plus, yes, you get alternative lines of income, so you can allow your account to accumulate, which is one of the reasons why I say, don't just quit your job immediately for those of you who are working and say, I want an immediate pressure to fund my living from my training. Because that puts a pressure on you psychologically. Keep your earning. Your job has served you. Yes, you want to leave it. But recognize all the pitfalls that await you in a trading career. And also, so this is the Demartini concepts. Defantasize being a full-time trader. There are losing days. They're tough days. And talk up that which has served you and bought you your house, put your kids through school. So that you take some of the sizzle. What we tend to do is we want to let go of something like it's a filthy rag and grab this new beautiful thing. This is the honeybee switching flowers. The other flower is always better. So I want you to do a little bit of defantasization. Yes, we are going to take you. And long run, I do think it's better for you. That doesn't mean you don't have to learn. You're not going to be challenged. You're not going to be forced to grow in self-awareness. That some fantasies exist in your mind that need debunking. And that something that has paid you a royal, consistent wage has served you and been quite low risk. And now you're trading it for something that is volatile and has high risk. And you can feast and famine. So just bear that in mind. We want to transition you slowly. And let's kill a few fantasies on the way as well. But you need support. Emotional, moral guidance. And you don't need one guy like me. You need many. And you can help. More than one guy, you can help many. A matrix of relationships. This is the reason why we establish a community. All doing the same thing, all wanting to achieve the same thing, and wanting good stuff for each other. And we win on each other's trades. Okay, so number four, flying solo. It's nice to have a trade debrief if you've got something wrong. Talk what happened here. We will do webinars. There's always questions on every one of my webinars. If there's something not answered, or you've had a bad event, and you need to talk about it, talk about it on the webinar, ask, and we'll do it publicly. Everyone will get the benefit. If you want a one-on-one, book in for a chat with me. You are entitled to do that. If you need a one-on-one and you don't want to discuss it publicly and you've burnt. So a couple of people come on the program and they'll lose their money management and they'll make a mistake. I've had it happen. They saw an HVF they really loved, they just jumped in. Just think, let's move my account. And they lost their discipline. You need a little talking to, but you need to not beat yourself up. So on that beat yourself up point, if I can just talk about mindset within this, while we're still covering the solo. Rand Howell says we all have a number of avatars in our mind, templates that we play. This is a bit of psychology, a little psychology sidebar. And one of them is the critic, the inner critic. When you do something wrong, and this is a generalization I'm going to give you now, you all have too harsh an inner critic. And I can tell you it absolutely right with me. It took me a long time to realize that I got really angry with myself and I kicked myself and I beat myself up when I'd made a mistake and I blew a chunk of my account. I took a chance. I thought it was an amazing pattern. I got a little bit excited, but adrenalized, jumped in, went in too big, blew a hole, etc. You have a strong inner critic. You need to forgive yourself. You need to remember how the trading game likes to fool you. It's a chimera. It says, wow, this can only go up, but you're getting seduced and hypnotized. Where's our man who was hypnotized? He was an iron rod for a while. He ceased to be a human. He was an iron rod. Remember that the trading game seeks to hypnotize you. Forgive yourself for failing, because by destroying your confidence with inner beating ups actually prolongs your recovery. Recognize it, write it down, put it in a notebook journal and say, I don't intend to do this again. This is new contract point with self, X, Y, and Z. Every trade can and will fail, potentially. I will never go outside of my sizing again. I now forgive myself for this error. I thank the market for teaching me this lesson, and I move on and I reinstate my confidence. That's what you need to do. You bring yourself back up after a failing. What's the other half of that? The virtual guys, what's the other half of what I've just said? Because there's a day and there's a night. What should be the other half of that psychologically and with your trading journal? What should you do in maybe an opposite situation? What do you guys think? Exactly, Julius, Mitch. Note the good things you did on your failings. That's one way of bringing it up. Hey, I recognized my mistake and I closed it quickly. I could have lost more. Yes. So that's on the bad side. That's a good thing. Not to be too excited by the success and talk yourself down. The whole point is you are an HVF yourself. Your emotions are an HVF. And I want you to be perpetually funneling. You are a line of spinning tops. Perpetually funneling. You never get schizo on me. You are never H1, L1. Because the H1, the next inflection point, is the L1. When you're at H1, the next inflection point for you is L1. After every major big success, I did that YouTube clip on the Robusta Coffee Trade, by the way, one of the most watched, that said how I made 165 grand. And I have the statements, by the way, to show. I dug them out from an old, I had to get them. CMC's platform has changed, was in 2006. I have them and I can show you, like 35 grand days, 1,000 pounds, boom, 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 bosh, 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 5-6 days. It might be fun just to show. And how it was the worst thing that happened to me. Because I went from H1 to L1. I had my ramp, had my H1, and then I had L1. Nothing else was interesting. Making 500 pounds in a logical voice to one, wrist to one with conservative sizing. Man, that was just plain boring. How boring is that? I've got a fat account making 35 grand in a day, four back-to-back days. One of them was in the 40s. That's cool. You make what a nurse makes in 4 hours in an entire year, tax-free, because it was actually spread beds. I mean, that was a CEO's of a FTSE 250 salary. It was more than his salary after tax in literally a matter of days. That was my H1. After it comes the L1. Luckily, I was a little bit already aware of that in 2006. I took 100 grand straight out the account, but I still left 65 in, and I was looking for the next thing. Why did I take the 100K out, by the way? Anyone realize or think? Why might I have done that? I was trying, what I was trying to do, I was partially successful, not fully, because it still was an H1 to L1, but it could have been a much lower L1 if I hadn't. Why might have I done that? Just in that particular example. No ideas? To protect the capital? Yes, Mitch says not use it or get too cocky. If your account size moved significantly in percentage terms, which it did on that, it was quite a big, I had a big account size, but it was quite, it still was a big, substantial percent gain on it. What happens is you get too confident and you think you've got free money to play fast and loose, and you cut to the chase and you start speeding up and you don't do the basics. And I recognized I was potentially going to be super confident. So I created a bit more scarcity in the account in terms of the money I had. Because you nurture your account most when you're in a mindset of nurturing the capital. When you're feeling, I've got plenty of fluff. I've got loads in there. That's when you get reckless and fast-paced. So I tried to reduce the element of, I've got loads of money. And that did work to a degree. So I didn't do everything wrong. I did a few things right. But the long and short of it, small, everyday, good quality HVF setups were no longer interesting. I was only chasing home runs with extremely high rewards. And my performance suffered for a while after that. So watch your H1 to L1. You want to be funneling. Emotionally talk yourself down when you're up. And manage yourself as being at your most dangerous. An overconfident person, watch it in boxing, watch it in fighting. Overperformance begets future underperformance. Write this down, actually, please. I'm going to ask you to write this down. And maybe when you're done today, put a few post-it notes up on your screen. I have a couple of things. Good, and you are going to have this problem, and it is a problem. It's a challenge. It's not so much problems. I talk about challenges, not problems, generally. You're going to have this challenge because you're going to land a few HVFs. You might, I'm hoping for you that you get the challenge of landing three in a row before you get a loser. And what's going to happen is that overperformance, because some of it still has a luck of outcome in it, they can and should fail as well, just as much as they can and should win. It's part of the process. This is not a 100% system. They fail. Or you misdiagnose. And you increase your likelihood of failing as operator, and you create a fail. Overperformance begets future underperformance. So those of you that, I don't know if any of you watched the UFC, but Conor McGregor became like this big, rah-rah, he's an Irishman, so it creates some interest because it's been dominated Brazilians and Americans. And he had a fight against a 10-year champ called Jose Aldo, who is a Brazilian. He won all his fights mostly by knockout, and Conor McGregor knocked him out in 7 seconds. Was it 15 seconds? 13 seconds. There you go. I've been corrected. 13 seconds. No. Accuracy is good. I have no problem with accuracy. 13 seconds, not 7 seconds. He knocked him out literally. They looked like this. He waited for the guy to come in. The guy came in and he clouted him, came into his punch, floored him, out, cold. And everyone, there was already quite a hype train about him. And now he's just taken out this legendary champ over. The guy was properly out. And the guy's just sitting down to the fight. If you hadn't got your popcorn on time, you missed the fight. So now the hype train went into overdrive. What does he do? He fights a guy two weight classes higher than him, agrees a fight with a guy two weight classes higher than him, and loses his next fight. Because I'm unstoppable. I'm a king. Nobody is like me. I am unique. And he sells his fights using hype like that, and he starts believing it. Miss the comments there. Shout them out for us, please, Bernard. Absolutely. Good. So, it's not a Conor McGregor thing. It's a human thing, particularly a male human thing. We vacillate from overconfidence to extreme confidence like an H1 to an L1. And I just say, stop funneling. Consistently show up in a steady state of mind, not overexcited, not too full of your own crap, not getting high on the smell of your own socks just yet, but at the same time, not sorry assed, and if I buy the market, it always goes down. If I sell the market, it always goes up. Don't do that self-talk. It's not funny. Let someone else do it. Don't you do it. That, not even in a joke. Your subconscious mind can't determine humor. Your subconscious mind can't determine humor. It hears just the content. Yeah, it doesn't understand irony. Okay, quite a long time on that slide. How are we doing for time? It is actually 11:30, which just means I've held you a little longer than your break. Are you okay for me just to work through two more slides? And then I'm going to give everyone a 10-minute, maybe make it 10 minutes instead of 15, just you make a quick turn in the loop, refresh your coffee or your water or whatever the case may be. So we've got some good stuff said and done. No holy grail. There is no holy grail. There is no 100% system. There's no 99% system. We will take losses. It's part of the game. And that just means you're one step closer to your next winning trade. And the losses often set up and keep you balanced. sometimes if you've had three winners in a row, it's better for you. Because if you have seven in a row, you have a serious overperformance issue. So it's not bad, it just is. There isn't bad price behavior, there just is. There's not good or bad. So the pursuit of the Holy Grail, forget about it, there isn't one. But keep learning and developing personally. Keep reading, to a degree reading. I've also criticized reading as well. So just analyze, self-work, read on the self-development, the emotions, the psychology, and managing your own emotions. If you want to study something that will make you a better trader, rather than reading about markets, read about either other great traders like bios, the market wizards and that, but also look at the self-work books, meditation, doing something for your health, getting out, and also managing self-awareness, becoming more aware of self and your own state of mind. Keep a journal. I've had three coffees. I was drinking 10 tequilas last night with my buddies. This is the birthday, and I've slept 4 hours. I'm giving myself a 0 out of 10 for training today. I'm not going to do it. I had a great sleep, caught up on my rest. I haven't just fought with my fourth wife, and I'm in a good emotional state of mind. I'm going to go, I'm good to trade. I'm giving myself a 7 out of 10 to trade. Understand where you are at and maybe give yourself a personal score. So share, develop, test and simulate. It's a good idea if you can algorithmize. We actually have got some development going on in that space. There's some interesting developments that may take place. But forget the notion of finding the perfect system. It doesn't exist. Don't seek perfection. Trend towards it, but recognize you never get there in terms of your execution. It's far better to have a good system you can stick to, which I certainly believe this is. This is the most emotionally safe system for every people. There are systems where you have to take 100 losses and then you get one massive home run and it pays for the 100 losses. Trust me, you ain't going to stick to it. There's systems where you get 100 micro winners and you get one mega loss that can strip them all away. Trust me, you ain't going to stick to it. And if you don't take that one that is your mega winner and you go for another 100 micro losses, you might have lost the game. This is losses are taken quickly. You don't wake up and have bleeding losses. I remember when I was looking over P&L shoulders of people who were, I was teaching in the academy, they would have 7 or 8 trades open and 5 or 6 were like hectically down. They would have one neutral and one winner. And every day they were opening up the same positions and looking at it. And there they were, getting worse, bleeding them out, bouncing around, all in the red. That's a nightmare P&L to see. Psychologically disappointing. It's running around. It's like water torture. They come in each day and see the same water torture, largely not changed, sometimes get a little worse, usually get a little worse, until eventually they're forced to acknowledge and then they close. So, that, you know, in HVF, I've often taken pictures of my P&L, much less trades, 3 or 4 winners, no losses. Not because they weren't losers, just because they didn't live in the blotter very long. If they've gone wrong, they've gone wrong and they closed. The ones that have gone right need a bit more time because I'm asking them to go a lot further. So by automatic definition, one of the key most things that people say about great traders is that their losses are cut early and their winners run or let to run. HVF method, by virtue of its process, makes you do one of the hardest things because people snatch profits and try and make their winners come back so that they don't have a loser. It manages one of the most emotionally difficult things for you. It's a loss. Stopped out. Another one. Bag it. Doesn't matter. You spent 50 quid. You paid it. You bought a meal. If you're managing the money, right, it's okay. Not spoiling your day. And then you've got 2 or 3 others. They're 300, 400 pound up on a 50 quid loss. And they're going to 600. So hopefully that makes the point. Let's finish the 2 last mistakes and then I'm going to let everyone go pee. Plan your exits. And this is what we do. Integral to the plan. You've never bought well till you've sold. You think you bought well, you bought low, and it goes lower still. That's continuation, in my view. Never bought well until you've proven it by selling well. There's no emotional or psychological comfort in trade if both profitability and money management aren't in the system. In other words, target and loss stop. So know where your exits are. If you're in a plane, if you're in a cinema, Well, the only thing that gets lit up when it's dark, this is where you get out. They show you the exits. Even though in planes, you're probably going to be mincemeat, they still show you the exits. And the possibility that you're hitting water and you're okay. You've gone down or the plane was on fire and it re-landed. The cinema exit is in red. How to get out? Think about that in your training. You must have your exit pre-marked and in the system. Your internet goes down, your mobile phone goes down, there's a London bombing, they take grid down, network down, what's going to happen to you? The markets will collapse down, you have no stop loss, you'll get auto-stopped out, you're over-leveraged, you're oversized, even if you're not, you're killed. Your order's in the system, you're the one guy that got traded. You can prove it. You've submitted it to the broker. They don't execute it. They've got to redo it. They've got to give you their close of the trade. Massive, massive potential for that. I mentioned grid and mobile down. It's a bit exceptional. But I do think these kind of events are slightly more possible than you give them credence. This is the value of having all your orders predetermined. The entire entry was based with an OCO order, target and stop loss. If they accept the entry, they've accepted the OCO order. They have signed a contract to you that they are getting you out. They could slip you. They can't not close you. Yeah?
Processing money, and it's actually not as uncommon in the crypto. All of this is stories about Bittrex is now, Coinbase is now, all of this you can get frustrated. There are also stories about when some of the people are in within the same chat room, probably the people who are locked on already and therefore continues to work for them. Some of them wants to log in now, probably can't because of the traffic.
I don't know if the online guys heard that, but just also a specific discussion to the crypto was that you often have outages. You often have outages. With cryptos, I'm more cautious in terms of placing the orders, though, because you get spike downs that are runs. So stop loss strategy with crypto is a bit unique in terms of that. I would not necessarily have orders, but I'm not trading with leverage. So that's the difference. I have all the money. So I huddle my way through a spike down in a rally up. If you are leveraged, you can't do that, you can get auto closed. One of the reasons not to use leverage in cryptos. So cryptos is kind of a unique market. I have my stop losses for closing a trade, and those are written down. They aren't put in the market for exactly that reason. So that's slightly unique discussion that's worth having. Anyway, on that good point, why don't we come back and do the seventh mistake after a quick turn in the bathroom. So if we can do 10 minutes, I've got it at 22:12. So 10 minutes, if you can be back for 10 to 12, and we kick on from this very slide. Anyone who's got questions, just post them up in the chat and we'll do a run through on the return.
Some guys have called negative today, but they have made a little conversation. Feel free.